to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis. Global and national interest in renewable energy is growing rapidly in response to both environmental and economic goals. Wind energy produced by large turbines is a primary source of new renewable energy across the United States. These massive units have become common features on both landscapes and seascapes, and not as singular units, but in fields of dozens or even hundreds of wind generators. What goes into the planning, siting, design, and construction of wind farms with turbines 100 meters and more in height? To bring us the perspectives of a major electric power company, we're talking today with Spencer Moore, who is Vice President of Generation for MidAmerica Energy Company, serving Iowa, Illinois, South Dakota, and Nebraska. I'm very pleased to talk with you this morning, Spencer.
Thanks for the opportunity. We're glad to be here to discuss our wind project.
Let's start with your overall business so we kind of get a sense of the scale and scope. Tell us a little bit more about MidAmerica Energy Company.
So MidAmerican Energy is the largest utility in Iowa. We've got about 770,000 retail customers that we serve. My portion of the business, I operate all of our generation assets, including our wind turbine fleet. We've got just under 2,400 wind turbines in service now. We've got a couple projects underway that we plan to add another almost 2,000 additional megawatts of generation to our systems. Once we get those projects completed, we'll have about 6,600 megawatts of nameplate wind capacity available for our customers. And by 2020, we anticipate being able to serve our retail load on an annual basis with 100% renewable energy. That doesn't mean that we won't have hours where we don't need some backup fossil generation, but what it does mean is over an annual period, we do expect to produce enough wind energy that would account for the same amount of retail energy that our customers would use.
100% of base load, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's correct, Professor. What we're trying to do is get to that threshold where on an annual basis, our customers are provided 100% renewable energy based on the amount of energy they use on an annual basis.
Presumably, while the wind varies through the day and through the season, you've got enough base capacity to handle your market.
Yeah, so we do have some gas generation as well as a little bit of nuclear generation and some coal generation in our portfolio that does allow us to back up our customers' needs when the wind's not blowing. But we do anticipate by the end of 2020 and getting one of our significant projects that's currently underway completed that we will meet that threshold where we produce enough wind energy annually to meet our customers' needs.
Tell us something about how you make decisions about siting wind turbines and wind farms. How do you pick the locations?
Well, it's actually an interesting process. So at our MidAmerican utility here in Iowa, we generally site all of our projects in Iowa. Iowa, for us, fortunately, is a great wind resource state. And we have a lot of good opportunities here where winds are fairly high, and we have a lot of opportunity with farm grounds to partner with local landowners to go ahead and lease some ground and place wind turbines. In general, a couple factors that factor into the siting are obviously the quality of the wind resource. The more wind available, the better for us to go ahead and produce energy with these machines. But we also have things that we look at for siting concerns with setbacks from roads, highways, and buildings. And we like to maintain good setbacks so we don't have impacts on any of our neighbors around. And I guess another important factor for us in siting is access to the high voltage transmission system.
You need to distribute that power once you've generated.
That's correct. It's very important for us to be able to generate that energy and then deliver it to where it's needed.
When you think about a new location, do you start out thinking about the scale, how many wind turbines you want to place in that area?
Yeah, so in general, we have a couple different tracks that we use to go ahead and construct projects. We do use independent developers. Well, we'll go ahead and buy a project development from a third party, and we also develop our own wind projects. When we develop our own wind projects, generally what we're looking at is kind of availability of land in the area, as well as access to that transmission system. There's a couple different factors that all go into the mix, but any one of those can be a thing that if you can't get access to permits or get good setbacks or get landowner cooperation, obviously we want to partner with folks who want to work with us, and we'll look for those opportunities here in the state.
Is it typical that you purchase the land or do you lease it?
Typically, we enter into long-term leases. For certain portions of the infrastructure, we will go ahead and buy the property. When we put our high-voltage substations for each of the projects into the developments, we will typically purchase that ground. But in general, the land the turbines sit on, and the land that we use for underground collection cables, access roads, that is typically leased. We don't generally buy those properties.
So when you're looking at a new site, do you come in the door saying, well, we want to put 5 wind turbines there or 50 wind turbines? How do you set the scale?
In general, that's kind of set with what we believe the needs for our customers are. So we've got a couple projects we've recently announced and are working on. One is our Wind 11 project, which is a project to add 2,000 megawatts of wind throughout the state. Those projects are located actually at various parts of the state. So while it's overall one project for us, I think we've got up to potentially 6 or 7 different project developments that will go ahead and build out those 2,000 megawatts worth of wind turbines. So as we site those, generally we're looking at, you know, how much land is available in an area, as well as how much energy can come onto the transmission system at that area without requiring a bunch of network upgrades to the high voltage transmission system.
I would assume, though, that at some point, you know, it's not worth putting in a single wind turbine someplace, that you've got to think of a larger scale to make the project worthwhile.
Yeah, now, for Mid-American, that's correct. I mean, in general, we like to do projects that have some scale, but, as you drive around Iowa, it's not uncommon to see a single large wind turbine off in the distance somewhere. In general, our projects, we like to keep them in that kind of 100 megawatt range and up. Generally, larger is better. We've done some single project or 500 megawatts of wind capacity, a couple hundred turbines at a single project.
Spence, what's the conversion ratio between megawatts and wind turbines? If I see a single wind turbine on the horizon, what's the megawatt output that I would expect?
So when you look at technologies advanced through time, you've obviously have some advances and some improvements that have been made. So some of Mid-American's older wind turbine fleet is as small as 1 megawatt of nameplate capacity. Some of the turbines that we've built more recently are 2.3 megawatts per turbine. And I guess we kind of see a forecast in the future, in 3, 4, 5, 6 years where the nameplate capacity for those turbines could be in the 4 megawatt range. So it's been a pretty rapid development here over the last 10 to 15 years in the wind industry. And we expect that development to continue and see wind turbines increase in size and capability.
The productivity of a single wind turbine, it sounds like, is a function of the scale, of the size of it, and perhaps the height as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In general, the larger the wind turbine, its rotor diameter, that's kind of the overall diameter of the blades on the machine. The larger, in general, diameter that those are, the more energy that that machine is going to be able to capture on an annual basis. So as you think about how you site a turbine on a day when there's not much wind at ground level, there may be great wind resource at 80 meters or 100 meters into the air. The taller you can place that machine in the air and have that hub catch the wind, the more energy we're able to extract from that wind resource.
What's the max height that you're targeting right now for new projects?
In general, right now we're building projects with a 95-meter hub height and then a 110-meter rotor diameter. There are some regulations from the Federal Aviation Administration that make siting a little less problematic for machines that are 500 feet and lower. So as we've developed projects here in Iowa, we've kind of used that 500-foot threshold as a limit on how high we can build out the machines. As capabilities and technologies change, we may take a different look at that, and it wouldn't surprise me as the larger manufacturers bring equipment to market that we look at some machines that are taller than 500 feet in overall height.
Do you do the structural design yourself, or do you outsource that?
In general, Mid-American likes to apply technology. We don't like to design it and be kind of an R&D firm, so to speak. So we generally have an engineering firm do some foundation design for us, and then we rely on the turbine manufacturers to come up with the tower designs, the structural design that the machines need.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So I'm thinking from what I see, for example, Siemens is one of the major turbine manufacturers. So a company like that would do the structural design of the tower itself?
Yeah, that's correct. Siemens is Siemens, GE, Vestas. A lot of larger turbine OEMs, they do that entire design. They have a supply chain that allows them to build the towers, the hubs, the nacelles, the blades, and be that single source supplier for that entire machine.
Kind of a turnkey operation. You make a contract with them and they build the structure for you. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, in general, that's how it works. We do some of the construction work on our own. We'll subcontract some of the underground civil work and some of the foundation construction. But the erection, generally, turbine vendors deliver those components, and then our construction contractor will generally erect those and get them ready to place in service.
And the materials? My sense is that for a long time, the material was steel, but now we're seeing more concrete towers?
Yeah, as one of the limitations with going to a larger wind turbine is that the components have to get obviously longer, larger diameter, and there are some constraints on the highways and interstate systems that just don't allow you to do some things. So we actually have installed one concrete tower here in Iowa where we tried to take a look at the advantages of doing a concrete tower structure and try to eliminate some of those transportation challenges. Now, I think as technology advances, we're going to see some interesting solutions from the various manufacturers on how they get the hub heights and tower sizes they need and still keep those transportation considerations well in check and able to deliver components wherever they need to go here in the continental U.S.
When you say transportation constraints, I assume you're talking about bridge height limitations, for example, bridge clearance.
Yeah, bridge height limitations, actually turning radius limitations when you're making a turn off of interstate onto a highway. There can be considerations with the radius improvements needed. So there's a lot of various aspects to go into that transportation component of delivering out these machines.
When you have those kinds of logistic constraints, does that push you in the direction of concrete where you can cast either close to the site or on site?
To date, it hasn't. Like I said, we've built one concrete tower that's actually located in Adams County in southwest Iowa. But in general, we're still seeing steel towers be very competitive in the marketplace.
And they're assembled from components that are brought in on the road?
That's correct, yep.
Are there issues associated with motion in the wind that push you in the direction of one material or another? I mean, sway like you would have in a tall building?
You know, in general, you know, I think we take a look at the high wind conditions here in the state of Iowa. Obviously, we're prone to have some tornadoes and other high winds here in the state. There's various building codes and design codes that turbine manufacturers adhere to, and we don't really have any issues with building sway like you'd have with a large skyscraper. Now, I have climbed wind turbines, and, you know, in general, we have them turned off when we have folks inside of them. I've never experienced sway, and I can't imagine that's a big consideration for how we design wind turbines. I think our bigger concern is making sure that foundation is able to take all the wind loads and all the loads that the machine has as it operates. And we're very happy with the performance of the fleet that we've had today. And I think there's a lot of good conservative designs out there in industry that allow these structures to stay where they need to be for a very long time.
When you say you've climbed them, my understanding is climbing them means climbing on the inside.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, every one of our wind turbines has a ladder from the ground up to nacelle where most of the rotating equipment resides in the machine. And yeah, that's a long climb, generally 260 to almost 300 feet in most of our machines. And you've got to be in relatively good shape to be able to make that climb a couple times a day.
Is that part of your job description?
Well, it's not necessarily part of my job description. I've done it a couple times, and you know, I'm glad that we have a lot of wind turbine technicians that are great at doing those climbs and maintaining those machines that handle most of that work most of the time.
How often do you need to have access to the equipment for maintenance?
You know, in general, these machines are fairly robust. On average, I would say that we have to access a wind turbine a couple times a year for normal maintenance, and then obviously certain things happen that require us to go up into a tower on an off schedule. But in general, these are pretty robust machines, and they don't require a lot of day-to-day hands-on type activity.
And is the management of operations and, say, condition assessment, that's all done remotely?
I mean, in general, that's done remotely. So here at MidAmerican Energy, we've actually got a project development underway with a big data analytics firm out of Chicago called Uptake, where we're trying to use a bunch of the data out of the machines to help us optimize some of our maintenance and operations practices. So we think we've got an opportunity there to uncover some items that will help us be a more efficient operator going forward, and we're looking forward to using a lot of the data that these control systems and sensors produce to help us operate our fleet in a more efficient manner.
And that operation happens from a control center? That is, you're getting data coming in from the turbines so you know what's going on there?
Yeah, that's correct. Our fleet is dispatched from a central location. We've got a couple different maintenance contractors that help us with some of the maintenance diagnostics and troubleshooting, and they're actually located at a couple different spots around the country for kind of central items. But in general, all the operational data comes back here to MidAmerican, and we dispatch the machines from one spot here.
And that's where you make decisions about, say, turning a machine on or off?
In general, yes. A lot of that is driven by market conditions and the wind resource. The machines themselves are automated, but based on market conditions, we may have a need to have a machine off or some other reason that requires us to take that machine out of service.
And when you put it in service, is it self-starting? That is, the wind itself is enough to turn the blades?
Yep, that's correct. Now, each of the wind turbines has its own weather station on top of it that helps the machine determine which direction to turn into the wind. It determines how much it should pitch the blades to capture the wind. And each individual machine has its own control system to help determine that optimal operation point.
And the weather vaning, that is the turning of the turbine head into the wind, Is that an automated feature?
Yes, that is.
I want to take you back just for a moment to foundations, because you've got really quite a tall tower here, a slender tower. So I would assume that the foundation design and construction is a fairly substantial task in the development of a wind farm.
Yeah, that's correct. When we install these wind turbines, we use a structural specialist to help us with that foundation design. That design is then, you know, reviewed by the turbine OEM to make sure that they're comfortable with it as well. But that is kind of our kind of addition to the project here. We take into account geotechnical considerations at the project sites where we're trying to develop these turbines, and we'll adjust our foundation designs accordingly to the conditions that we encounter out in the field.
And the blades themselves, where are they fabricated and how do they get to the job site?
So the blades are fabricated at various spots around the country and internationally. And there's large blade manufacturing facilities in the Midwest. Iowa has a couple very large facilities, one down in Fort Madison and another one in Newton, Iowa. But the various manufacturers have those manufacturing capabilities kind of scattered throughout the Midwest and West. And, you know, as far as transportation, in general, the products that we get here in Iowa are either brought in via rail and then trucked to site, or they're trucked directly from that manufacturing location out to our projects.
And that's a kind of a different problem than moving the components of the tower itself, because if I understand it correctly, the turbine blades are integral units. That is, when they deliver to the job site, they're complete single blades.
That's correct. I think as some of the manufacturers are starting to look at longer and longer blades, you will start seeing some modular type blades where you've got a couple sections to that blade and it won't be necessarily a single structure. But we have not gone into that type of purchase here at MidAmerican. But as technologies advance, we expect to see more of that in the industry.
Sounds like the field is changing rapidly, expanding, but also changing in terms of scale and technologies. Are the codes keeping up with that?
I believe so. You know, I think the loadings on foundations are considered to be kind of a standard engineering practice. I think, you know, there's various industry organizations that help come up with design standards and codes. And then, you know, there's industry user groups that assist with some of the design and other siting considerations that come out with some of the advancements that the various manufacturers are coming up with. So the manufacturers are obviously sensitive to having these machines out in the field and being able to have technologies applied that are safe, reliable, and efficient for their customers.
It's really interesting to me to drive across the country or to be in other countries and discover the scale of these wind farms. I mean, I've done some driving across Iowa, and I'm almost never out of sight of these. Is your expectation, is the goal of MidAmerica to get away completely from these backup sources, natural gas and nuclear, over time?
Well, you know, I think over time, as we see technologies advance, what we'd like to do is apply technologies that allow us to efficiently and safely serve our customers. I guess in Iowa, wind is a great resource for us here. It allows us to be very competitive from an energy production and supply standpoint. But as technologies change, certainly if battery technology, for instance, or solar prices continue to decline and we see opportunities in Iowa, we will take a look at various technologies that allow us to continue to serve our customers in a safe and effective manner. And if we can do that in a more carbon-free environment, we're absolutely going to take a good hard look at that and see what we can do to make that transition.
It's been very interesting to learn about this technology from you, because it strikes me that the change has been relatively rapid in the direction of renewables, and particularly in terms of wind energy. So, Spence, I'm grateful that you spent the time with us this morning. I'm going to be a little bit more thoughtful and careful when I drive across Iowa looking at those wind turbines. So, thanks very much.
Well, we appreciate it, and we hope you have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please encourage your friends to subscribe to our podcast. The Infrastructure Show is recorded in the Reeves Audio Recording Studios in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Jim Reeves, chief engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.